Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the Prospect Podcast. I'm Stephanie Rowland, Head of Digital here at Prospect Magazine, and this week we'll be discussing everything you need to know about the Labour leadership campaign with former political advisor and Labour Party insider Tom Hamilton. Before that, a quick show note. As the new year rings in, we're taking on a new name and will be called The Prospect Interview. Rest assured, everything else about our podcast will stay the same. This year, you can expect to hear some of the brightest minds of today join our editors to discuss the ideas that matter most in politics, art and culture. Now, back to the episode. Our guest Tom Hamilton was Ed Miliband's policy advisor when he was leader of the opposition. He's also been the head of research for the Labour Party, where he helped prepare Ed Miliband, Harriet Harman and Jeremy Corbyn for Prime Minister's questions. He recently co-wrote Punch and Judy Politics, an insider's guide to PMQs, with co-advisor Ayesha Hazarika. Before I meet Tom, however, I'm joined here in the studio by our deputy editor, Steve Bloomfield. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Steph.
Now, Steve, I know you've spent much of your Christmas agonising over what's going to happen next in the Labour leadership contest, in between seeing your, you know, wife and child.
Yes, most of Christmas has been reading policy briefs and watching videos, stirring videos by all the candidates about, you know, exactly how working class they really are, and reading all their pieces in The Guardian, which set out just how socialist they are.
See, I know you're lying there because you talked about policy briefs, which we know nobody cares about yet. What's your feeling about the field so far?
Okay, so let's do a quick rundown of who there is. There's Rebecca Long Bailey and Keir Starmer, who are the two front runners. Then you've got Jess Phillips and Lisa Nandy, who've both also sort of at least reached the next round. They've reached a threshold of 22 MPs who have to back them. And then you've got Emily Thornberry and Clive Lewis, who at the time of recording are both still in it, but are quite some way away from the 22 they need. And unfortunately, we don't have Barry Gardiner. He was here for 24 hours and then he left. So you've got six candidates, probably four that will go through to the next round. It might get whittled down after that. They've got to get a number of unions and affiliates or constituency Labour parties to back them. Then it goes to the membership. And I think the two things that strike me about the race so far is, one, how actually it's quite hard to work out what the differences are in terms of policy between any of these candidates. You know, aside from Lisa Nandy saying, I wouldn't keep free broadband, no one else has really said how they would differentiate from Labour's last manifesto. And the other is, they've all been trying to push their backstories and how they are definitely socialists, they are definitely from a working class background, however they might appear today.
I mean, we'll get into this a little bit more with Tom, but I think what you said there about policy is so interesting because, look, we're not heading into a general election for a long time. This is a debate about what you think about Corbyn's record before it's a debate about how you win the next election in several years' time. Let's talk a little bit about Barry Gardiner's run, not run. are we going to admit to the Prospect Barry Gardiner story?
There is a... do you mean the picture?
I mean the picture.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. We did have a rather odd picture. So, okay, some context. Barry Gardiner has been around forever and it was at the 97 election, I think it was, he had the strangest election material you have ever seen of him sat with a child, not entirely sure if it was his own child. Was the child reading, or maybe Barry was reading a book to him?
I feel like they were reading the book together.
Yeah, yeah, it was all very weird. Anyway, and you, Steph, very kindly a few months ago put that in a frame behind my desk, so I had to keep on staring at it. So thank you very much for that. I mean, this is the thing, though. Barry Gardiner is a bit of a cult figure within the Labour Party. I don't quite understand it, but he is. What his very brief leadership run and then not run shows, I think, is perhaps that not all Corbyn supporters are 100% behind Rebecca Long Bailey, who is, you know, she doesn't necessarily like this phrase so much, but is seen as the continuity candidate. And I think that's one of the things that I find interesting, is that both the front runners, Long Bailey and Keir Starmer, are quite fragile. Long Bailey is not as strong as Corbyn was in 2015, and Keir Starmer, you know, even some of his supporters say, yeah, he's all right, or look, we need him because otherwise it will be her. Again, like, he's not a Tony Blair from 94. So that makes it interesting for, you know, people like Jess Phillips and Lisa Nandy in particular, who are not as out of it as you might have thought.
It's really interesting what you say about MPs maybe backing people you wouldn't expect them to back. Not everybody who backed Corbyn is moving towards the Corbyn continuity candidate now. We have a great piece on our website by the Labour writer Tom King about who MPs backed in 2015 and comparing that to where the support is now. And there's some quite surprising switches. Neil Coyle, Corbyn 2015, is not backing Rebecca Long Bailey. It will surprise you to hear.
But I think that's also partly because there are a lot of people who backed Corbyn in 2015 in this sort of misguided idea that it would broaden the debate, and they lent him their support. And then, you know, Margaret Beckett says, you know, that was the greatest political mistake of her life to do that. There'll be a little less than that this time around because of the consequences from it last time. But yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing on policy will be, will there actually, once they're over the threshold, once these candidates are actually proper candidates in the race, will we start seeing policy? And I guess the other thing as well is, you know, what happens when the Equalities and Human Rights Commission report into anti-Semitism comes out? Is that then the moment where Rebecca Long Bailey breaks with Corbyn? Or is that a moment where someone like Lisa Nandy or Jess Phillips, if they're still in the race, can try and paint both Long Bailey and Keir Starmer as, look, you sat alongside this guy, and this is what the HRC has said?
Well, we will see. Thank you, Steve. And now we've got a bit of an overall look at our field. On to our main conversation with Tom Hamilton to discuss the details of the Labour leadership contest. Hello and welcome back to the Prospect interview. I'm here with Tom Hamilton, a former Labour Party speechwriter and advisor. Tom, you've worked with Ed Miliband, Harriet Harman, Jeremy Corbyn and seen the Labour Party transform over the years. Now, it's been an eventful few weeks, and it's probably true that wherever you sit in the Labour Party, if you're a member or just somebody who frequently votes Labour, you might not be feeling great right now.
Well, no. I mean, Labour's just had what's sometimes described as its worst defeat since 1935, except that 1935 was quite a good result for Labour because it was gaining seats and vote share. So it's far worse than anything in not just any of our lifetimes, but probably our parents' and grandparents' lifetimes as well. So there's no getting away from the fact that Labour is in a pretty bad state, having lost about a fifth of its MPs at the last election, and, you know, in a worse position than it was when it left government nearly 10 years ago. And that means that the leadership election is this slightly, well, it's not that it's impossible for Labour to get back into power next time, because these things are never impossible, things can shift, but it's an enormous challenge. And Labour has to act and certainly conduct a leadership election as if it is choosing the next Prime Minister, when most people involved know that it probably isn't, and that's quite a weird dynamic.
It's an interesting tension there, isn't there? Because so many of the launches, whether it's Rebecca Long Bailey coming out in Tribune, this kind of new left-wing publication, or Jess Phillips in the Mirror, seem to be more about that defeat than about where we go next in some senses.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, and that's not unreasonable, because one of the first things that any political leader or wannabe leader has to provide is an analysis of why Labour isn't in government now, because that is going to be a huge driver of the way in which they lead the party, the direction that they try to take it in. If it's your view, hypothetically, that Labour got basically everything right in policy terms and even message terms, but just had a leader that people didn't like, that takes you in one particular direction. If you think that everything was fine except the Brexit position, that takes you in a different direction. If you think that nothing was right, then you probably need to change everything from the leader to the policy platform to, you know, just you name it. Now, I'm not saying that any of those is the right interpretation, but whichever of them you take, you're clearly going to then lead the party in a different way. So it is a big part of, it's the starting point, A, intellectually, and B, just physically. It's the starting point because we are nearly 5 years away from the next election, almost certainly. It's hard to see circumstances in which the Tories would bother to go to the country before 2024.
Let's pull it back to kind of the next couple of months.
Yeah.
And for the benefit of our listeners, and for the benefit of me, who keeps forgetting the exact percentages, talk us through the stages of the leadership contest. So we've got four people who have got the nominations from MPs at the time of recording. But that's only the first step, right?
Yeah, that's right. So previously, the system has been that a percentage of MPs, most recently 15% of MPs, have to nominate someone, and then they are on the ballot and the members decide who they're voting for. Now you've got preliminary stage, which is that 10% of MPs have to nominate, which, given that Labour has done so badly, is quite a low number of MPs. I think it's 22 MPs or MEPs, so it's the PLP comprising MPs and MEPs. The MEPs are about to disappear from the system, but they haven't quite.
So PLP, when we say that, that's the Parliamentary
Labour Party. So MPs and MEPs, but not peers, who are members of the PLP actually, but they're not elected. So you need to get 22 of those, and then it goes to a new stage, and then you need to get either 5% of affiliates, which is the various organisations that are affiliated to the Labour Party. That's trade unions, several trade unions, not all of them are affiliated, and various socialist societies, including at least two trade unions, and including at least three of those organisations. And that's the 5% is measured by the total amount of the membership of the entirety of the affiliated organisations. So what that means is that there are about four trade unions that can take you over that threshold, and then all of the other organisations involved are absolutely tiny and will not, even if you add them all together, which is highly unlikely to happen, they probably wouldn't get you to that point.
So what are those four biggest unions we're watching?
The four biggest unions, oh God, now you're going to test me. Okay, so it's Unison, Unite, GMB and Usdaw, and then it seems to be you're pretty close to that number. Community are quite big, but they're not quite at that point. And then there's obviously a lot of other ones, right down to the National Union of Mine Workers, which has as close to no members as makes no difference in terms of its voting strength. So you need to get either 5% of those organisations, or the membership of those organisations, or 5% of the CLPs, which is the constituency Labour parties, which have previously never had a formal role in the nomination of the leader, but have always had the ability to just say who they are supporting in the election. But that may change the dynamic of it a bit. That will take about a month for that to happen, and all the CLPs will have to have meetings they can choose to have meetings at which they will nominate which candidate they want to support. Because that's an important part of the process now in a way that it never was, that might change the dynamic of how that happens. At the time of this recording, Keir Starmer is the only person to have got the nomination of a big union. It's possible that others will follow. At the time of recording, it looks like Rebecca Long Bailey is quite likely to get Unite, but that is not decided at this point. So those two may go forward and not need CLP nominations. So the question will be whether the CLPs collectively, or individually but turning into a collective, decide that what they want to do is to ensure that the other candidates who may not get union backing get on the ballot. Or alternatively, they might well just follow. I mean, the thing about the favourites in any election is that they tend to be the favourites across the piece. So there will be a lot of CLPs, I would imagine, who will want to be nominating Keir Starmer and Rebecca Long-Bailey simply because most of their members support those candidates, which will potentially make it harder for Lisa Nandy, Jess Phillips and the rest of the candidates. But it's just too early to say how that dynamic plays out. In previous elections, that's been a reasonably good guide to what the result of the election will be. But that's because all they were doing was expressing a preference and they weren't nominating. There'll be a similar pressure on CLPs to nominate, say, Jess Phillips and Lisa Nandy, potentially, if they haven't otherwise got on the ballot, that there was on MPs in 2015 to nominate Jeremy Corbyn, even though they didn't necessarily personally support him, just to widen the debate. So, you know, Labour's got this long-standing view that widening the debate is a good idea, even if you don't like one of the bits of the debate, which I'm never sure how sensible that is, but it's a view. And then once that nomination process has been completed, and it's perfectly possible that it's still possible that everybody in the race could still be in the race at the end of that process. It's perfectly possible that as few as two could be left in the race. I would probably bet on three or four, but we don't know. Then it goes to a ballot of all of the members of the Labour Party, all of the members of the affiliated organisations who have signed up as people who want to support the Labour Party and vote in that election. And there's also a category of registered supporters who are famously in the 2015, they were the £3 £3 members, they weren't members, the £3 registered supporters. That's not a £3 fee anymore, that's a £25 fee. And if you're interested in voting in the election and you don't know what to do, it makes a lot more sense financially to just join the Labour Party and pay whatever the monthly fee is by direct debit, and cancel it if you don't like the result, than it is to pay £25 up front. From a purely financial point of view, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but nevertheless that category exists. So that's a total electorate of a total theoretical electorate of somewhere between, if you count the unions, it's enormous, but if you count the unions, you're getting into the low millions. If you just count the membership, it's well over 500,000. They won't all vote, but it's a big number. And that's not a very interesting part of the conversation, is it?
I think it is interesting, though, because as you were breaking that down, and there's a lot of moving parts, as you say at the moment, but as you were breaking that down, with the caveat that, again, like you say, if you're the front runner, you tend to be favoured by lots of different parts. There's multiple audiences these campaigns are having to speak to right now, and sometimes very broad audiences. So you have Rebecca Long-Bailey, for instance, launching in this left-wing publication, Tribune, cementing her position as the continuity Corbynite, the socialist candidate, talking to that momentum left of the party electorate there. But then you also have Jess Phillips going to the Mirror, and from your experience working, sort of trying to sell politicians to the public, it's got to be quite complex to call all of these different groups of people at once.
Yeah, and it's a question of who you think the audience is. And, I mean, look, the Mirror clearly has a bigger readership than Tribune by quite a long way, but most of its readership, frankly, won't be that interested in the Labour Party leadership election and may not have read that article. Whereas the quite small circulation of Tribune will almost entirely consist of people who are very interested and engaged in that election. And also, Rebecca Long-Bailey's team would have been perfectly well aware that a lot of people who don't normally read Tribune would see that piece because it goes around on social media. And social media might, it's in some ways quite a niche place, but at the same time, the Labour Party, left-aligned Twitter and Facebook and so on, consists of, quite a significant chunk of that particular electorate. So, most people who need to see Rebecca Long-Bailey's initial pitch will have seen it. That's not the same as saying that she has so far reached the majority of the people that she will need to appeal to if she's going to win. But, she'll be perfectly aware of that. She's got 3 months to go until the winner is announced. So, that's potentially quite a smart place to launch. But at the same time, I think by launching in the Mirror, Jess Phillips's article will still have been read by exactly the same group of people who are highly engaged and interested in the Labour Party leadership election and will probably vote in it and may or may not have her as their first choice, but you know they're watching it. But also by choosing a relatively high circulation left of centre publication that is, you know, it's a tabloid, it's aimed at a particular audience, that's a statement in itself about she wants to say that, and she's not wrong about this bit of the analysis, that a lot of people who previously voted Labour didn't do so this time and Labour's got to appeal to them again. And, you know, the Mirror is one of the key publications for doing that. I mean, not by any means the only one. I mean, the BBC is probably even more of an important audience, but you can't launch your leadership election campaign on the BBC. So, I mean, realistically, there are a relatively small number of publications that are going to be read by a significant chunk of the electorate. Tribune actually isn't really one of them, but that doesn't matter because you can just force particular articles in Tribune into the wider discourse. The Mirror probably
it's also a statement of intent as to investing in a part of the Corbynite project, isn't it, as well? I mean, Tribune's come out of this group of new emerging publications. The New Socialist Online is maybe another one that are intellectual, thoughtful, policy oriented. So it's she's trying to telegraph something about the type of pitch she is.
Yeah, absolutely. And she has been really closely associated with not all but quite a lot of the Corbyn project from a policy point of view. She was the the shadow business secretary. She had a lot to do with the Green New Deal, Green Industrial Revolution, a lot to do with a lot of Labour's policies towards workers' rights. You know, big important parts of Labour's platform, which she's made a point of saying that she stands by and didn't think were wrong or the reason that Labour lost the election. And it's pretty clear that part of the agenda would be continued under a Rebecca Long-Bailey leadership. In fact, she's talked about the fact that in her view, the Green Industrial Revolution would have been a better frame to fight the election in from a campaigning point of view. And you know, there were potential sort of strategic comms mistakes in terms of Labour focusing on different things, arguably about Labour focusing on too many different things all at the same time, rather than just not focusing on that as much as people might have liked. So yeah, I think for those parts of the Labour movement who are A, very interested in policy, and B, very interested in the particular policy direction that Jeremy Corbyn's taking the party in, that they would like it to continue in whatever else the party does, that's quite an important place to go. The other point about the different kinds of media, and this is where we come back to the Mirror, I guess, is that one thing that it's quite easy to forget about the broader Labour electorate is that a huge chunk of it actually isn't that engaged in questions about the Labour leadership. A lot of them quite literally will not have heard of all of the candidates who are standing at this point, although hopefully they will by the end of the process. They're not thinking about it very much yet, but you know, eventually a ballot paper will land on their doorstep or into their inbox, and they will they'll make a decision. And there are different kinds of Labour member who've been Labour members for different periods of time and for different reasons, or indeed people who, you know, who've joined a trade union through their work and, you know, signed up to pay the political levy, but are not particularly interested in Labour politics, but probably broadly would vote Labour rather than Tory even now. And, you know, if you give them the choice of who the next Labour leadership should be, then, you know, they'll vote one way or another.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you hear people already saying this can't be a personality contest. We have to think about policy. We've got climate change. We've got a radically transformed economy. We've got austerity, you know, years of austerity. This is a really urgent moment to make a call on what practically we want the Labour Party to be. But this process is a personality contest to some extent, and particularly with those kinds of members.
It always is. And in the end, I mean, personality and policy are not things you can disentangle as easily as all that. I mean, Labour has a tendency to want to have, and this is, I think, it's a genuine electoral drawback, even if you like every single policy that's been announced. It has a tendency to partly through its policy making processes and the way that different bits of the party are empowered to help to make policy, it tends to have to make policies on pretty much everything and stick them into policy documents and manifestos. And sometimes it chooses to emphasize very small parts of that policy agenda. Sometimes it chooses to emphasize lots of it. I do think that genuinely one of the problems in 2019 was the manifesto was really, really big and just had, you know, it wasn't clear what the single defining message of that campaign was.
Have you still got Tony Blair's pledge card in your wallet, Thomas?
I haven't. It wasn't before my time in the sense of whether I was, you know, alive, but it was certainly before my time in terms of voting for the Labour. I voted Labour in that election.
You're just knocking some years off your age.
But I didn't have a pledge card.
You didn't have a pledge card. Okay.
Yeah, but actually, it is fair to say though that one of the issues in 2019 is that with the best will in the world, it would be very hard to construct a 5-point pledge card from that manifesto, or you could compile several 5-point pledge cards with different pledges on, and I don't know what they would have chosen as their top five. It wasn't entirely clear, which was, you know, part of the problem. Christmas and clarity are electoral advantages, as the Tories found with, you know, get Brexit done. It may not be particularly pretty. It may not tell you anything about what they're going to do about a whole swathe of policy that you might care about, but at least you know what they think they're about and what they want you to think that they're about, and that's not unhelpful.
Yeah, we had a great piece by the Labour writer and commentator Emma Burnell on the Prospect website this week saying we should ban the phrase Tory voter because it's standing in the way of people within the Labour Party communicating properly with the electorate. Just go, there are people who are Tory voters, and what you're saying about pledges and the manifesto seems to really chime with that, that you need to make a pitch based on what people are interested in hearing about and how you talk to them and the empathy you need to have for your voter. And, you know, most people won't read your manifesto. It sounds very obvious, but
yeah, I mean, one thing that we've learned from the last election, and to be fair from previous ones as well, is that if you only get the support of Labour voters, then you don't win elections. So it's pretty obvious that Labour is going to need to win over at least some people who voted Tory last time. That's not to say that that's the only place that votes can come from in order to build a winning coalition, but it is a really important part of that winning coalition, not least because every vote you take from the Tories is a vote that they are losing, as well as just a vote
Tory
that you're adding to your own total. Tory votes
count
double, exactly, yeah. So all of the candidates will be alive to that. They'll just have different strategies for how they want to deal with it. And some of them may appeal more to people who have recently voted Conservative than others, but it's quite early to say what their strategies might look like.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So you were just talking about people potentially not being familiar with all of the leadership candidates. Shall we move on to the deputy leadership candidates, who potentially even fewer people are completely clear on? There's some really interesting dynamics and tensions running around here, though, right?
Yeah, there really are. And I mean, I think the deputy leadership campaign is different from the leadership campaign in, well, in lots of ways. But one really important way is that there does seem, at the time of recording, to be an overwhelming favourite, not just in terms of the MP nominations that she's received, but also, I mean, I would be quite surprised if Angela Rayner didn't win that election. I mean, things can happen. Someone can come through and surprise us, or she could go badly wrong in ways that I find difficult to predict at the moment. But as things stand, she is clearly the runaway favourite in that election. She's an interesting candidate because...
We should just pause for a second to say, Zoe, the far more insightful commentator, and your 17 or 18 month.
Your old daughter is
chiming in with her analysis.
Yeah, I'm doing my bit for Labour's policy agenda by working a 4-day week, and Friday, which is our day of recording as well, is my day when I look after a small girl,
And
utilising the free childcare provided by Prospect magazine,
so, by a male deputy editor. So we're really got the progressive agenda firing on all fronts there.
she's gone out again with a snack. So
from one strong woman to another, Angela Rayner, you were talking
Absolutely.
About.
Yeah. So I mean, one of the interesting things about Angela Rayner is that for some time, people have been suggesting that she is quite a plausible future leader of the Labour Party. I mean, she may still be a future leader of the Labour Party.
Should she have run for the leadership, do you think?
Well, I think if she had run for the leadership, she would certainly have had a pretty good chance at winning it. Not by any means a certainty, but she'd have had a decent shot at it. I would never criticise anyone who chooses not to run for the leadership of the Labour Party, because it's a really horrible job that I would have every sympathy for anyone not wanting to do. But she has certain things going for her which are quite unusual in senior politicians, in terms of, you know, her background as someone who dropped out of formal education relatively early, was a teenage mum, came back into the workplace after that and worked her way up to become now a frontline politician, which, you know, probably the first senior Labour politician since Alan Johnson to have that sort of backstory. Another person who's often described as one of the best leaders that Labour never had. She has an ability, I think, potentially to communicate with and connect with certain parts of the electorate that Labour needs to talk to. But at the same time, it's perfectly reasonable of her to decide to let someone else take on that mantle and to run for deputy instead. I mean, who knows, she may be playing a long game whereby she recognises... So I think I said earlier that it seems pretty unlikely that Labour's going to win the next election, but the deputy leader might be quite well placed to become leader in future. But that, you know, I don't know how strategically she's thinking, and whether she just thinks I'd rather be deputy leader at the moment. It's a less demanding job, and that's not that unreasonable of her.
I'm afraid now you've mentioned Alan Johnson, all I can think of is his appearance on The Masked Singer last week in the kind of scarab style.
I didn't watch The Masked Singer, but I saw it all on Twitter and I just found it completely baffling. I could not understand what was going on. And I've now at least read about The Masked Singer, but...
No,
even less insight into that than I can on the Labour leadership.
Illuminate that image. If you're listening to this and you didn't see it, please do Google Alan Johnson, Masked Singer, just for a bit of a laugh. It was quite a... striking spectacle, shall we say. In terms of Angela Rayner, and obviously we've got Rebecca Long Bailey, who, as you said, is very likely to get Unite's backing and be on that final ballot. Surely it is time for the Labour Party to elect a woman leader.
Well, yeah. And there's an interesting dynamic in Labour leadership elections almost every time, especially in the last few sort of post 2010. Where people have said it's about time Labour had a woman leader, and then people also say, but this particular time the person that I'm backing just happens to be a man, but you know, ideally there will be women as soon as possible. A stat that I keep coming back to, or a fact I keep coming back to, is that there's only one woman in Labour's history that's finished higher than bottom in a Labour leadership election, and she finished above another woman, which was Yvette Cooper in 2015. Now, I don't believe that gender is absolutely the only reason why those people have consistently placed below their male opponents, but I also don't think it's a non-existent part of the equation. And it is, I think Labour sort of collectively does feel quite ashamed of the fact that it's never had a woman leader, but it also
elected woman leader.
It's had two women leaders who've done the job in between elected male leaders, yeah. as deputy. But no, that's right. It feels ashamed of it. It thinks it should change it, and it always thinks, you know, next time we'll elect a woman, but this time this particular man just happens to be my first preference. It's quite possible, actually. I think, you know, Rebecca Long Bailey really is in a position where it is not remotely implausible that she could win, and actually, it's not completely implausible that either Lisa Nandy or Jess Phillips or both could do better than people think at the moment. Although, as things stand, I think they would count as sort of second tier outsider candidates. But, you know, a lot can change in a campaign, both by people performing well and people performing badly. And, you know, they certainly shouldn't be ruled out. In fact, there are more leading female contenders than leading male contenders at the moment. But nevertheless, there is one quite significant leading male contender who, you know, is the polling favourite, and certainly wouldn't be at all surprising if he won, which is Keir Starmer.
We've not really talked about the voting system, but we should also point out the way that Labour votes on the leadership can have quite a significant effect there. I mean, if we have Keir Starmer and Jess Phillips on the ballot, the second place preferences might take one of them over the line. I don't know.
It's possible. I don't know how that would end up breaking down. I mean, there are lots of different dynamics, and the one that is always talked about is the left right dynamic within. You know, that I always bridle slightly at the idea that that anyone in a Labour Party leadership candidate is in a Labour leadership election isn't left wing, because they're all left wing. They're all standing to be the leader of a left of centre political party. But that doesn't change the fact that some are more left wing than others, and some count as being more on the right of the Labour Party. Although not very far on the right of the Labour. I mean, Jess Phillips is not really on the Labour right. She's a soft left politician, if you want to get into this.
This is a bit we're going to clip for Twitter.
I know,
and you can
clip, yeah.
Have this row this all day.
Yeah, please don't do that. They're all on the left, but some of them are more on the left than others. But then there's the question of, you know, you can talk about continuity Corbyn as if that's a pejorative. You can talk about that as if that's a plus point. You can talk about that and point out that it is inevitably an oversimplification of what's going on, which it certainly is. But there are candidates who are more committed than others to continuing as much of Jeremy Corbyn's legacy as possible, and others who want to make a clean break from it. And that is partly about what they really want to do, and partly about how they think they need to position themselves in order to win an election. I mean, the other day when Rebecca Long Bailey was asked, and it's not a brilliant question, except that it got an answer that was newsworthy, so I guess it was a good question, what she'd give Jeremy Corbyn out of 10 for his leadership, and she said 10 out of 10. She was widely sort of ridiculed for that in the media and among certainly some parts of the Labour movement that is less pro-Corbyn. And, you know, it's pretty obvious that in some respects Jeremy Corbyn's leadership was not as perfect as that mark implies. But someone pointed out to me that purely from an electoral point of view, that might be the best answer. You know, there might be enough people voting in this leadership election who believe that about Jeremy Corbyn to think that anyone who's not prepared to give that answer might not be enough of a keeper of the flame. And, you know, who knows? I thought Keir Starmer's answer to that was pretty good, which is, I'm not going to give Jeremy Corbyn a mark out of 10. He's a friend and a colleague. Go away. Which is, that's the good sort of dodge the question kind of answer. But yeah, that sort of, that question of how far you see yourself as a continuation of a project, which it's a weird project because it has been in some ways very successful in terms of its dominance of the Labour Party and its shift of Labour's policy position on certain issues, and its shift of the way that Labour talks about certain issues over the last 5 years or so. And then there's another sense in which, you know, in purely electoral terms, it has to be judged as a failed project because it led to Labour losing a lot of seats. And those things can sit together. I think it's easy for either side to use that as sort of part of a factional war and use it as ways of, you know, coming up with gotchas against each other. I think it's not unreasonable for those people who are not part of the Corbyn project to concede the point that, you know, Labour has moved in a direction which the party membership as a whole is more comfortable with in terms of its rhetoric around austerity and so on, while also acknowledging that from an electoral point of view, it hasn't yet had the success that they would have wanted.
It would be interesting if we do have Rebecca Long-Bailey as leader to see, as you say, it's an oversimplification to call her the continuity Corbynite candidate. She's, you know, not just the Corbyn proxy, but how the moderate or more right-wing sections of the Parliamentary Labour Party would respond to her winning that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of talk under Corbyn about whether people would break away, and obviously some people did, and the experience of Change UK was that, well, it certainly wasn't electorally successful at all in its own right, even if some of the people involved would stand by their decision to leave the party. I would be really surprised if a Rebecca Long-Bailey victory led to any sort of party split. I think it might lead to some people whose analysis is that Labour can't win with this agenda to be a bit demoralised, but that's not, well, A, they might be proved wrong, and B, in any case, I don't think they've got anywhere else to go at this point. I'd be really surprised if it led to anything very much in those terms. And I think actually, you know, one of the things that if she wins, she will have to think about is, does she want to be more explicitly, what's the word, not non-factional in her appointments than Jeremy Corbyn was? I mean, to be fair, Corbyn was more non-factional at the beginning than he was after the 2016 second, you know, leadership challenge. And that was partly because, you know, he was in a position where there were certain people he had to reward and certain people who wouldn't go into the shadow cabinet anyway. I think there's a criticism to be made that he kept his shadow cabinet the same for quite a long time, despite the fact that not everyone was performing brilliantly. Would that have changed the result of the election? Probably wouldn't. So let's not dwell on it. Excited about it.
And to be clear, you have a similar question, whoever the leader ends up being. I mean, if Jess Phillips was leader, it'd be a real question for her and her team how she works with momentum going forward. So this idea of how you move on from quite a fraught period for Labour factionalism and try and bring back together an electorally successful coalition is there for anyone.
Yeah, it is. And I think that one of the most important things, whoever wins, will be for as many bits of the Labour Party as possible to recognise that although there are factions and different views and different traditions within the Labour movement, it is only really in a position to win when those factions are more or less pulling together. So, you know, it will be incumbent on both sides, in a hypothetical world in which Jess Phillips won, it will be incumbent on both her and Momentum to recognise that Momentum has, you know, at least two functions within the Labour Party. One is to push for a particular kind of politics and a particular kind of policy agenda, which it will, I imagine, do under any leader. And one is to be a mobilising force of campaigners, which, again, I would hope it would do under any leader. And a leader who doesn't come from that tradition, who is prepared to embrace that, I think is likely to be more successful than one that tries to expel them. You read people on Twitter saying, you know, maybe they could just prescribe Momentum. What planet are you on? I mean, you might not like them, all of them. You might not agree with all of their sort of political perspectives, but for goodness sake, this is quite a significant chunk of the Labour movement who you seem to want to go away. And if, you know, well, they probably will go away if you say that, but then you get a different kind of electoral problem, which is that, you know, the left part of the Labour coalition, goes off in different directions.
Well, Zoe's definitely not happy with that happening.
She doesn't like that idea. No, she's going to join Momentum as soon as she's on.
Let's give her the final word. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks. Keep up with the ongoing analysis on prospectmagazine.co.uk. And Tom, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks very much.
We'll leave it there. And that's all from us this week. Thank you for joining us on the Prospect interview. We'll be continuing to run coverage of the Labour Leadership Contest on our website, prospectmagazine.co.uk. And finally, if you enjoyed the Prospect podcast, please do leave us a rating and a review. It really does help. Goodbye, and see you next week, where we'll be talking to journalist Hepzibah Anderson about our diet in the age of the climate crisis. Is veganism, or plant-based eating, really the answer?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.